This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. As always, during this period, we are focusing on COVID-19. We're talking to consultant geriatrician, Professor Dr. Tan Mo Pin, again today about not just about how the elderly are particularly vulnerable to COVID-19. We've covered that with Professor Tan before, but this time we're focusing on why nursing home residents are at risk. And we would like to find out what can these facilities do to protect their residents during this pandemic, and for those who have family members, what can their family do? How are you today, Professor Tan?
I'm fine, thank you. Well, as well as I can be, because it has actually been an extremely stressful week last week, and we're really hoping for a better week this week, but I'm not sure it is going to be. Yeah.
Okay. All right. And I remember the last time I checked in with you,
yes,
when we did the show about how to protect the elderly, you brought up nursing homes and aged care facilities. Can we talk about just generally first, I think, with the movement control order, with supplies and movements being restricted, what are the problems that nursing homes are facing right now?
Okay. Well, the first thing that had emerged when we were actually engaging with these care homes was that they had no supply of hand sanitizers and face masks, especially face masks, because, you know, the supply is so short. And because they're having to change so often, the limited supply they have all run out. And we still have not figured out a mechanism of actually getting hand sanitizers and face masks to them, even though we have repeatedly flagged up this issue with the authorities.
And these face masks, for instance, you know, we've heard sort of varying recommendations as to whether lay people should be wearing them. But in the case of the elderly, would you say that all elderly people should be wearing them?
No, the face masks are not for the residents. Well, in fact, now with the changing in recommendation, especially in the US, we actually, maybe the residents should be wearing them. But what we were recommending was that the caregivers actually wore them when they were attending to the residents. And they will have to change this every 3 hours or so. Also, if the resident was sick, then they would have to wear a face mask. And so if they didn't have any of this, we were just envisaging the scenario where, let's say, one of the residents falls sick from COVID-19. They didn't even have the most minimal protection to keep them safe. So actually, we were really very, very scared. So what we then did was actually basically send the advice out to the nursing homes to seal themselves off from the outside community. So they're basically quarantined, self-quarantining in actual fact. So the whole home is being self-quarantined instead of individuals, like it's happening in the UK, where they're telling people who are vulnerable to self-isolate to actually prevent themselves getting ill like the rest of the population who are actually developing herd immunity. So in the case of our nursing homes, we're asking them to just stay cut off from the community. So all deliveries have to be passed over such that there was no direct contact. So they will stand there, the delivery comes in a package, and then they will wait till the delivery goes away, and then they will bring the delivery back in. And then no visitors, zero visitors. And that was causing a lot of upset with the care home residents' families. But we had to, get a letter, which was eventually furnished by the Ministry of Women, Family and Community Development. They did furnish a letter eventually, mm-hmm, that informed family members they were not supposed to come and visit. And of course, there were exceptions for the terminally ill, or when, if the resident got too agitated and really needed a family member to calm them down, for instance. But by and large, the rule is no actual visitors. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what we then also told them is that they can actually communicate with the family members through video WhatsApp, and then we help them with a letter to actually explain to the family members why they can't visit and how else they could do things. Because otherwise, just giving them a letter to say you can't come is probably quite stern, and to advise them that they can carry on dropping food over to them. So that was actually the first thing that emerged. But very quickly, what then emerged was, because of the MCO, a lot of these old folks' homes were charitable. Their lifeline was actually people sending food to them on a daily basis. And some of them, their stores vary. So those who have stocked up well, I think they're still okay. But those who didn't have much in their stores initially, they were running low at a, you know, very quickly. So we were able to flag up the issues. And of course, the community rose up to the challenge and very quickly provided to them. So it's thank goodness for modern communication. We could actually solve that issue. And then what emerged was that the health service became very, very concerned about all these volunteers going out to the community to help people who are needy. And of course, those just are not just the old folks, but you know, these volunteers were putting themselves at risks because they might not, they were not always following the necessary social distancing procedures. And then there was a lot of movement of people moving around, just helping others. Mm-hmm. So when the aid came out for the 25 million kind of welfare aid, if you like, there was an announcement that this will only be given out by the JKM, that's a welfare office officials. And there was a furore because a lot of our care homes, I'll only talk about what's relevant to us, even though we do care about lots of homeless and refugee communities out there as well. But with regards to older people, these old folks, a lot of these care homes are not registered. So JKM would not know about them. And now is not the time to be punitive. You know, you're not registered. I'm not going to let you starve. You can't let them starve to death. They still need to aid. Mm-hmm. And we have a list. And the local community sometimes support them. And those are under the radar. We don't know about them. So how are these people to continue to get aid if only JKM was allowed to give aid? So mm-hmm. there was a continued dialogue. Fortunately, there was a continued dialogue, and things changed from day to day. So now NGOs are allowed to deliver to these people, but the regulation is changing on a daily basis. So I'm not going to put it out here just in case it changes again today. Mm-hmm. And it will be distributed to those NGOs who are actually providing aid.
Okay. Coming back to the point where you said that the nursing homes have to be sealed off.
Yes.
No visitors allowed. What about staff and volunteers? I understand that under normal circumstances, they have sort of non-staff volunteers who go in and help with the daily care and duties as well.
Yep.
Yes. So how are we dealing with staffing issues right now?
Okay. Staffing issues are serious because a lot of our care homes actually hired fresh nursing graduates who were waiting for their placements with the Ministry of Health. I'm sure some people are aware that the Ministry of Health froze recruitment for some time. So these freshly trained nurses didn't really have a job under them, were waiting for their jobs under the government. And so they actually got employed in care homes, which was good for care homes because they had trained nurses. But then suddenly, with a shortage of nurses because of this pandemic, all these nurses are actually recalled. Mm-hmm. So suddenly a lot of our care homes are down kind of 20-30% complement in staff. And we don't know this because none of them are going to declare to us that they're short-staffed because it's bad for business. Mm-hmm. So we don't really know who's short-staffed, who's not. But you can only establish this personal communication. So then, and then we also tell them that if you're sick, the staff are sick, they must not come to work. Mm. So anyone who's vaguely sick can't come to work until they get checked out. So that all, again, cuts down the complement of staff.
Yep.
So we still need volunteers to come. So what we've done is, if you're a regular volunteer in the care homes, or if you want to be a new volunteer, you can also come. And also all the staff, they are all screened on a daily basis. So they will be asked whether they've had any foreign travel. If they've had foreign travel, out of the question, self-quarantine for 14 days, come back in 14 days. And if they have any symptoms of fever, cough, shortness of breath, sore throat, any of that, don't come in. We will not check you out. And everybody gets a temperature checked every day before they come to work. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But some care homes have done above and beyond this recommendation. And I think a lot of the staff are aware of this because, you know, it's all over the news. You know, these care homes in Spain, these care homes in US, and now recently a UK care home also got affected, and a Singaporean care home as well. They mm-hmm. know this. A lot of the staff have voluntarily, if they were able to separate from the family, or they didn't have young family of their own or elderly to look after at home, they've voluntarily moved into the care homes. They've actually self-quarantined in the care homes to basically just create that environment. And in quite a lot of care homes, that seems to be quite possible.
Mm.
But for those who can't self-quarantine, then they're given very strict instructions what to do in terms of every day when you go home, you must have a shower and before you touch your family. When you come in, they're screened again. And everybody's screened anyway, at least once a day, to make sure they have not developed any symptoms that could suggest they have COVID-19.
Mm.
Yeah, so it's all very strict, and we keep sending the messages out repeatedly to the care homes that we can reach. So there are two issues with care homes. They're not all registered. Yeah, yes. And now's not the time to talk about why they're not registered, because, you know, usually when we mention this, we end up having to tell a long story. There's no time to tell this story. That's another story for another day. Let's sort it out. Try and get to the unregistered home so they get these information. But because they're not registered, they're under the radar. And so we actually send the messages out to communities who are actually helping reach these unregistered care homes. So the message we send is, if you're in any way affiliated with a care home, please share this information with them so that they will know how to actually protect themselves against a nursing home outbreak. Yeah. So the greatest fear, of course, that we have is a nursing home outbreak. Because our care homes are all situated in relatively cramped conditions. We tell them they must be at least 2 meters apart, but most of them can't afford that kind of luxury. So 1 meter apart is a minimum, and even for some of them, that's not achievable. They tend to have a lot of group activities, and the staff will actually, you know, will not usually have the luxury of practicing hand hygiene
mm-hmm.
between every single resident. So we have to enforce that they do make as much effort as they can, use up every single space in the care home to make sure everybody's spaced apart. No group activities whatsoever, and that they must practice hand hygiene. But remember, they have no hand sanitizers, so they have to actually go to the sink, wash their hands you know, for 20 seconds.
That's right.
And then dry them before they go and see the residents. So that takes up a lot of time, and it's not always possible, because if the residents at risk, they still have to go out and actually save the resident before actually practicing hand hygiene. So it's all there's going to be little chinks that emerge as you try and enforce this kind of restrictions, which is so we do worry. Okay. And these older people will drop like flies, and you know, we've got really good evidence. So we know that when an older person who's very frail gets COVID-19, they might not have the fever, they will not necessarily complain of shortness of breath, they might not have a cough, they might just be not themselves, you know, just not right. They might just be a bit weaker. They might not just lose appetite. So how are we going to tell whether this is COVID-19 or not? So they have to have a very, very high index of suspicion. And then, of course, because of the close proximity to each other and the difficulty in the staff practicing good hand hygiene between patients, the risk of transmission once it gets to one patient, to all the other residents and all the care staff, and then them if they were going back to the families, then taking it back to the families is huge. Yeah, and from the reports that we were getting from Washington, these care home residents were just dropping like flies. So literally, they were fine 1 minute, and another minute, they were not fine anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So we are trying to get to the hospital systems to warn people about this. Mm. Communication, lines of communication, is a huge issue. We are not getting through. So yes, we are getting through to the care homes because they know the problems, they are scared, they want to know what to do to help themselves. But we are not getting through to the health people.
Okay.
And that's our worry.
Yeah. All right. We'll come back and find out more. I'm speaking to Professor Dr. Tan Mo Pin, consultant geriatrician. We're looking at aged care facilities where the elderly residents and their staff and the volunteers who work there would be most at risk. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living. I'm T. Shao Eek. On the line with me, Professor Dr. Tan Mo Pin, consultant geriatrician. We're looking at how to best protect nursing home residents from COVID-19. Before the break, Professor Tan, you've already gone into a lot of detail about what the nursing homes and their staff need at this point, the measures that they need to take to ensure that the residents are well protected. And, you know, we've started discussing, it's very sad when you hear about clusters in nursing homes. We've heard about them in South Korea, in the US, in Singapore as well, and how COVID-19 just sweeps through the moment you have even just one infection. And you've explained that with the elderly, they may not have the typical fever and the cough and the sore throat. And it could be very vague symptoms like loss of appetite and just not being themselves. And before you know it, they've succumbed to the infection. Before the break, you talked about the nursing homes know that they need to take extra precautions, and they're very cautious and they're very anxious, of course, to protect themselves and all their residents. You said that you're not getting through to the health system. Can you elaborate on that?
Okay, so the health system is doing an extremely good job. I mean, there's no denying this. Yep, they've been given challenges that's unimaginable. So, you know, we've had huge clusters, and the way they've responded, you can only pat them on the back and say, good job.
Absolutely.
So, but the problem is that because the issue with COVID-19 escalated so quickly, before we knew it, there was an MCO order, and we would never quite got through to the system yet. So while we have guidance for care homes, we don't have guidance for care homes for the health system. So they are not aware of how to approach care home residents who turn up to hospitals. Mm-hmm. So this is our main worry. Because remember I said, the older person in a care home might not present with a cough, shortness of breath, fever. They will just be not quite right. And unfortunately, there are a lot of older people turning up not quite right in hospitals all over Malaysia right now. So which one of them has COVID-19? So when we presented the case and we said, you have to treat all of them like they've got COVID-19, and all our frontline workers handling any older people who could be from a care home especially, but also all older people in general who are frail, needs to be treated as COVID-19 positive until proven otherwise. And it's not really for the protection of the older person, it's for the protection of the healthcare workers. And so because otherwise the healthcare workers will catch infection, and the whole emergency system, the whole system is compromised. Because you imagine you bring an older person in, you don't realize they've got COVID-19 because contact tracing can be difficult. And then they might not exhibit the typical symptoms. The whole emergency department, all the staff who came into contact with that patient, out of action for at least 14 days. That's provided they don't catch the infection. Yeah. So and then you move them to a ward, and the ward becomes compromised, right. And all the staff on the ward can't work for 14 days, provided they don't get infected. I hope none of them get infected. And if this happens in hospitals all around the country, we'll be in big trouble. Right. So they need to be. We need to raise some sort of awareness in the system that these people need to actually assess, treat them like COVID-19 until proven otherwise, and they need to be able to have a way of identifying that these people are from care homes. So the history of care home, being a care home resident, might not be explicit. For two reasons, the doctor might not know to ask, and the a person bringing the older person in might not know to say so. But there is actually a more sinister reason, because a lot of our care homes are not registered. They don't want to be found out. Yep. So they might conceal the fact, and they might collude with the family members and conceal the fact that the older person is from a care home. So the doctors need to have a way of actually winning over the older person and also the caregiver to actually establish whether this person is actually from a care home or not. And then when you have someone from a care home, you need to raise the alert straight away. There's no time to be wasted. The district health office needs to be notified ASAP. They need to go to the care home and straight away do contact tracing and also help the care home actually put into action the COVID crisis response their protocol. So they've been told what to do when they have someone with suspected COVID-19. They've been told to actually isolate the resident ASAP. So they shouldn't just call the ambulance and send them just like that. They should isolate them, if possible, in a side room. And then also, if they were in a shared room, the person in close contact should also be isolated. And if there's no rooms, because some care homes have no single rooms, they need to then put them at least 2 meters apart from everybody else, and they should do maximum protection. At whatever they have, you know, whatever little face masks they've been saving up, use all of that, aprons, gloves, anything they have, headgear, and then to alert the authorities, and then until the patient can be safely retrieved. And then they need to let the district health office know who will actually direct them how to disinfect the area and what to do then for contact tracing. So they know that, but the health system also needs to know how to activate that. And the other thing that we tell the doctors is that they must ask, if someone's on a care home, whether any other person in the care home has died in the last 14 days. So most of our care homes are small, you know, roughly about 30, 40 residents max. So they're not going to be huge numbers like the ones that we see from Korea, from US. So having two deaths within 2 weeks is not common for a care home. So if that happens, then they should already raise the alarm that this could be the start of a nursing home outbreak. And of course, the necessary, has anybody else sick in the care home? That should also raise the alarm of a nursing home outbreak. So these need to be actually communicated to our healthcare workers. And unfortunately, at this current moment, everybody seems to have other priorities and we are not getting through. Yeah. The other issue we have is discharges to care homes. So this, we just talked about admissions from care homes treated as COVID-19 until proven otherwise. And also very, very high index of suspicion that an outbreak might be happening. And then the next thing that they need to think about is, what do they do when they discharge to care homes? Now, at the moment, there is, among the care home community, a blanket ban on admissions. I know this will sound horrifying to the health service. How are we going to just get paid? How are we going to stop older people blocking up beds? They call them bed blockers, which a term I hate a lot, but that's what they call them. Because if they can't go to a care home, the family can't care for them, how are they going to manage? Now, a lot of families are choosing not to take their loved ones to a care home in this MCO anyway, because they're at home, they might as well take them home, care for them. So the crisis has not emerged yet, but it will emerge when we are no longer able to discharge to care homes and patients start piling up in hospital. We have no plans what to do next, because we don't have anyone to communicate with. There's no agreement about what should happen, because all we're getting is that no, we cannot discharge to care homes. We will become bed blocked. But you're like, but you can't discharge to care home, because anyone who's been in the hospital could have been in contact with someone with COVID-19. You introduce COVID-19 into one care home, you end up with a whole care home in your hospital. Mm. Now, that's not what what you want to happen, do you? Mm. I don't think people can think quite that far. So at the moment, there's this constant battle between care home owners and hospitals about the care home owner will refuse to admit the patient, the hospital will be actually insisting that the care home takes the patient. So we have not come to a compromise or a decision what to do for now. And the safest thing, if you were a hospital doctor, is not to discharge in a care home and find a way of actually having an observation step down ward in your hospital where you can house these older people who will actually who needs a care home until we come out with a solution for the care homes. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, there's a way to discharge, but we just have, you know, they haven't even got a mask. So how are they going to do the isolation when they get discharged? They haven't got space. So we need, if you want to discharge care homes, you've got to equip the care homes with the PPE. You know, the PPE that everybody's talked about with frontliners. But if you want to discharge an older person to hospital, from hospital to a care home, you need to equip the care home staff with personal protective equipment. Okay, so who pays for this personal protective equipment? If this was a charitable care home, unless someone donates this equipment, they will not be able to afford it. It's expensive. If it is a private aged care facility, do you transfer the cost to the already overburdened family members to also pay for the PPEs? Mm. And then we have then this issue of training, you know, because PPEs can be a risk if you don't doff, that means take it off correctly. They might smear themselves with the virus and things like that. So the care home workers need training on how to put the PPEs on so that they're actually sealed off from the outside environment, and then how to take it off safely and how to dispose of the PPE safely. Number one, the care home needs to have adequate space to isolate this patient for 14 days after discharge from the hospital. That is not possible in most care homes. So there is a compromise in that you can find a quarantine facility for 14 days before they're discharged to the care home, but that has to happen. And then the next thing that actually needs to happen is swaps. If you want to discharge someone to a care home from a hospital, you need to swap them twice to make sure they have not got COVID-19, isolate for 14 days, reswap again with no COVID-19. There is really, I know it sounds like a total overkill, but, you know, look at what's happening out there. I can't see why this is an overkill at all. You know, this needs to happen to prevent care home disasters, because if we want to keep our mortality low, this is what we're going to do. Otherwise, it'll go what we call pear-shaped. It'll go really bad.
I know you said that many of the care homes are not registered, but do we have an estimate of numbers?
We think there are at least 1,000 unregistered care homes out there. Yeah. Added to the registered ones. I don't have the exact numbers because they change quite a lot, but easily several thousand care homes in Malaysia.
Yeah. So it doesn't make sense. To me, it doesn't make sense that there are no clusters in nursing homes right now. Is it that we're not picking it up?
Or they're not reported?
Yes.
Yeah. I suppose, yes, that's quite true. It's very difficult for the care homes because if you report, if it comes out in the news, the care home becomes stigmatized.
Yes.
And that means then all the care home workers might run away. And then you end up with a care home with no staff. Or the family, there will be huge panic stations among the family members and also the local community. Mm. So I'm not surprised if it has already happened and the care home owners or the hospitals locally have kept it under wraps. There is a public health concern that this should be actually out in the open, but we can also understand the rationale why people might not want to be transparent, because you don't really want a care home with no staff. That's a worst case scenario that you could ever imagine. Yeah.
You know, you talked about the problems with not being able to discharge to the care home. And we've heard of the private hospitals in Malaysia have offered to step in to offer beds to Ministry of Health hospitals. Yes. Could that be an option?
And hotels.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got so many hotels out there who are not being used, you know. Yeah, give them a treat for a while. You know, put them them in these hotels until you want, and then you can, we can, they can take them back once the hotels are being occupied. And then it'll give the hotel staff a reason to go to work, and then they can actually the hospitality staff are trained to be hygienic. They are trained to look after people, you know, so they would be good people to call on at this current moment where care homes could be potentially short-staffed, and also care homes are cramped.
Yeah. But even hospitality staff would need the appropriate PPE as well.
You're right there, actually, because some guidances actually suggest care home workers should wear PPEs all the time. But and if we have the resources, we should entertain that, because there's no such thing as being too careful. But we can supply them with masks, teach them good hand hygiene, and they can put on PPE when they do procedures that are particularly high risk, like aerosol generating procedures, when they do suction, or when they have to feed the older person, and the older person spits or something. But those are small numbers we can handle. And talking about numbers, okay, so when we present this case of PPE screening, swabbing to care homes, people are horrified. "We haven't got the resources," they said. I was like, "Yeah, but the potential implication of something going wrong might actually make this cost effective." The question is, in how many care homes? Because as I mentioned, the care homes are small. Some of them only have like maybe 10 residents. So it's the absolute number of the Malaysian older population who are actually in care homes right now. And we know from our surveys, it's around about 1%. And in hospitalised populations, 7% of our hospitalised older people are from care homes. When you do ward rounds, they seem like a lot, because these are the frailest segment of our older people. And when they come to hospital, they stay a long time because they tend to get the secondary infections, or they're the ones with the pressure sores. So they will actually they will be in hospital for longer. But absolute numbers-wise, ours is much, much smaller than Korea, than Italy. So we can afford, we should be able to afford to be extra cautious in a way that maybe other countries can't afford to be extra cautious.
Okay. So then what do we need to prioritize? Let's look ahead. We've talked about problems, the challenges right now. I think for me, the biggest concern is that gap between what the care homes need and what the health system is able to sort of mitigate. What would you say would be the urgent priorities right now to ward off this sweeping, mass infections?
Yes. Well, the problem is, if you don't plan, you plan to fail. So what we really need is for someone to realise that perhaps nursing home outbreaks are already happening, and there needs to be a blanket strategy on how we treat nursing home admissions in our healthcare system and how we discharge to care homes from hospitals. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, more and more disasters will happen, and it will contribute greatly to the mortality numbers. Number one, it will be a huge issue with regards to our social care system. In future, it will, care homes are already stigmatized. We can't afford for them to actually be stigmatized even more when we were actually working so hard to actually, getting them out to the open and getting them all registered and coming out with laws and policies that care homes can abide to, those sort of things. We've worked so hard. Instead, we would ask that this can be used as an opportunity. So this is an opportunity where we can actually get, if the authorities play it right, you can get these illegal care homes or unregistered care homes to actually realise that actually I'm better off working with the authorities. Simplify your registration system where they can actually get registered quickly. We appeal to them to actually have an amnesty in registration, and that they could have some sort of carrots in that if they register, they'll be sent some free face masks and some hand sanitizers, and then they can have someone actually help them monitor infection control, etc. This is an opportunity we can make use of, and it's already happened. Because of this crisis, it's brought together lots of interested parties from the social care system, healthcare and healthcare system, and we've actually come together and come up with a guidance. So there is already an interim guidance for care home that we've produced under the umbrella of the Ministry of Health, the Institute of Clinical Research, the Ministry of Health, and it's been endorsed by the Ministry of Women and Community Development. And it's also been looked through by the Malaysian Society of Geriatric Medicine. And we've done this in collaboration with the Institute of Gerontology. It's now called the My Aging, the Aging Research Centre in UPM, as well as the H-COPE, which is the Nursing Homes Association. So it's so there is already a unified guidelines that we're working together to disseminate. And these guidelines can actually be found in the Malaysian Society of Geriatric Medicine website.
Mm-hmm.
It's got all the resources they need, so they can download and print out signs and put it up. It's in four languages: Chinese, Malay, Tamil, as well as English.
Mm-hmm.
The website's name is msgm.com.my. That's a website address. Just go to the website, download it, and share it with any care homes that you have been in contact with.
Mm. Okay. Do you have a final message for us, Professor Tan?
Yes, I think that we need to realise that our older people are actually our country's greatest pride and joy. It's a proof of our success of our nation that people have the privilege of growing old. So let's make sure that we look after them, that we actually care for them at this very, very difficult time.
All right. Thank you so much. I've been speaking to Professor Dr. Tan Mo Pin, consultant geriatrician. We've been exploring how to protect care home residents from COVID-19. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.